Om, om, om. Om. Om sahana vavatu sahana bhunaktu sah vidyan karavavahai tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Chaitanyam sarvagam sarvam sarvabhuta guhashayam yat sarva vishayatitam tasmai sarvavide namaha. Oh my, good. Welcome to you all. And welcome especially to the many students attending these classes online. We continue now at the end of chapter 14. Before we see the chapter, I want to apologize especially to the online students for last week's class, which had terrible audio and I failed to put the slides up, like you see right now. I'm sorry for all that. This is a new setup, and it's still working on some of the bugs, so to speak. Hopefully going forward, we won't have those problems again. So we are at the end of this chapter 14. Before we see that, there's a question with regard to last week's class. Often I speak of subject-object context. Consciousness as the illuminator, mind as the illumined. But then last week I talked about there being no gap between mind and consciousness, consciousness being all-pervasive. Mind is necessarily non-separate from consciousness. And that leads us to, he says, which is an Advaitic view that the mind is not a separate entity apart from consciousness, which is quite correct. But these two statements seem contradictory. Subject, object, illuminator, illumined, knower, known, is our statements of duality. But then mind being non-separate from consciousness is a statement of non-duality, he asks. I would appreciate if you can reconcile these seemingly contradictory statements. The problem is, when we look at Vedanta as statements of fact, that's not Vedanta at all. You've heard me say a number of times that Vedanta is not a collection of statements of fact, but rather it is a teaching methodology, a sequence of steps to lead you to discover your true nature. Now, a sequence of steps is like a set of stepping stones across a stream. In order to go to the next stepping stone, you have to leave the prior stone behind. So it's a matter of establishing a position and then negating it, establishing another position and negating it. In Sanskrit, this process is called adhyaropa apavada, superimposition and subsequent negation of that superimposition. It's a little technical. How about this? If you're studying mathematics and you study Euclidean geometry, and then the next chapter is non-Euclidean geometry, does that mean the second chapter contradicts the first? Or is that a progression of standpoints. So one way to understand the methodology of Vedanta is that intermediate standpoints are established and then they are negated. Certainly subject-object duality between knower and known is an intermediate position, which of course gets negated. So Vedanta is not a collection of statements of fact, but rather is a methodology in which tentative standpoints are established and then negated. Okay, enough said. Let us proceed. At the end of the last, in the prior class, we had seen two refutations. Refutation of the Buddhist perspective and refutation of the materialist perspective. As we're coming to just four verses left, we'll finish today. So you can't finish a chapter with refutations. You have to finish with Siddhanta. Siddhanta means your established point of view, your established truth. So we see that Siddhanta today in these four verses. And if you remember, the general topic in the latter part of this 14th chapter is that your true nature as pure consciousness is asanga. Asanga is a beautiful Sanskrit word. It's hard to get the same feeling in English. Detached comes close. Unassociated comes close. But the problem is, in English, detached and unassociated, these have like a negative context, a negative feeling to them. And the term asanga in Sanskrit has no negativity associated with it at all. In fact, it means that you are utterly unaffected by any kind of suffering whatsoever. Asanga means you are detached from the body, so problems of the body belong to the body. You are detached from your mind, separate from your mind, utterly unaffected by what happens to your mind and your body. So in this way, you become utterly free from suffering, which is the ultimate goal of the teachings of Vedanta. That freedom from suffering is gained not through removing the source of suffering. If the source of suffering is your body, you can't remove it. If the source of suffering is your mind, you can't remove it. So the solution of Vedanta is not to remove the sources of suffering, but rather to discover that you are absolutely okay in spite of the problems of your body and mind. And that is accomplished through discovering that your true nature as pure consciousness is asanga. Asanga in the sense that it is utterly untouched, unaffected by anything, any problems, any suffering. Okay, with that introduction, we can turn to these final four verses. As always, as I'm chanting, read the translation and then repeat after me. And we're in the longer meter still. Yathavi shuddham gaganam nirantaram. Yathavi shuddham gaganam nirantaram. Na sajjate napi chalip. Lipyate tata na sajjate napi cha lipyate tata samasta bhuteshu sadaiva te svayam samasta bhuteshu sadaiva te svayam sama samatma yajaro maro bhayah sama samatma yajaro maro bhayah. Beautiful metaphor given here. Yatha, just as, gaganam, space. just as space, which is nirantaram, it has no inside and outside, it has no parts, it has no partitions, that space is vishuddham. It is utterly pure, unaffected. The metaphor often given in texts is smoke in the air. Smoke affects air. When you breathe polluted air, you're affected by the smoke in the air. But that smoke doesn't affect space. With regard to the smoke, the space is asanga. So that space is vishuddham, utterly pure. And that space, nasajjate, doesn't get affected, doesn't get touched by the smoke or by anything. Napicha lipyate, nor is it tainted by anything. A beautiful metaphor we've seen several times already. Tata, in the same way, and pick up these words, end of the third line, ayam, this, middle of the last line, atma. Ayam atma, in the same way, this atma is sada, as in sada atma, this atma is sada, always samaha, the same meaning unchanging, unaffected, untainted. Samasta bhuteshu sada eva teshu, sada always abiding, teshu in them, in what? Samasta bhuteshu, always abiding in all creatures. So space is not confined by any object whatsoever. Space doesn't get limited. Space, we say, is sarva vyapaka, all pervasive. Space being all pervasive, it is present in everything. Consciousness, atma, being all pervasive, like space, is simultaneously present in all living beings. But like space is unaffected by smoke in the air, consciousness in all living beings is utterly unaffected by suffering due to bodies and minds. So here we come right back to atma being asanga. Now, oftentimes when we see a comparison like this, people will ask, how do we know it's true? So it's atma is compared to space. Atma is said to be all-pervasive and untainted, like space. So how do we know it's true? Well, everything in Vedanta, you remember this topic, everything in Vedanta is based on our three foundations, Shruti, Yukti and Anubhava. Shruti, scripture, Yukti, reasoning, and Anubhava, experience. And there are two kinds of experience we'll talk about in just a moment. So first of all, that consciousness is all-pervasive and utterly unaffected by anything and everything. First of all, it is revealed in scripture, Shruti. The ancient sages discovered this truth and they revealed that truth to us through the scriptures, in particular through the Upanishads. Then yukti. This metaphor is an example of yukti, the use of metaphors, similes, comparisons and contrast. All of these are examples of the use of yukti, reasoning. So here we give an example of that which resembles consciousness, space, and then we established that space is indeed all-pervasive and utterly unaffected, untouched, untainted, and the same would necessarily apply to consciousness. This is yukti. Shruti, yukti, and finally, anubhava. And anubhava, as I just mentioned, is of two kinds. They say vidvat anubhava and vividisha anubhava. The vidvat anubhava is the experience of an enlightened person. So, those who are enlightened teach you that in terms of their own experience, consciousness is indeed all-pervasive. Vidvat anubhava, we learn from the experience of those who are enlightened, those who are a little further along the spiritual path than we might be. But then we also learn from our own anubhava, the vidisha, those who want to know, those who are seeking enlightenment. We learn from our own experience that consciousness is all-pervasive and utterly unaffected. How can we establish that in our own experience? It's not that hard if you learn how to meditate properly, because in deep silence, in samadhi, you discover that you, as pure consciousness, you discover that you experience no edge, no boundary, no limitations whatsoever in samadhi. Right now you feel limited, spatially limited, stuck inside a body. Certainly you can appreciate that in samadhi. You no longer have the experience of being embodied consciousness. In samadhi, your experience is of being all-pervasive consciousness. So the point I'm making is that anubhava here, shruti, yukti, anubhava, the anubhava includes both the experience of enlightened ones and your own experience. So when we see a statement that like space is all-pervasive and untouched by anything, so too consciousness is all-pervasive and asanga. How do we know that's true? Shruti, yukti, anubhava. So notice that we don't accept anything as a matter of faith. It's a fact for you to discover the truth of it for yourself. Okay, let us proceed. Amurta murtani cha karma vasana. Amurta murtani cha karma vasana. Drishi swarupasya bahi prakalpitaha. Drishi swarupasya bahi prakalpitaha. Avidyaya hyatmani mudha drishtibhir. Avidyaya hyatmani mudha drishtibhir. Apohya netityava sheshito drishihi. Apohya netityava sheshito drishihi. Start in the second line. Bahihi prakalpitaha. That which is bahihi means outside. That which is external to you is prakalpita, projected. First of all, what is external to you? We'll see first, and then what do we mean by projected? We'll see that second. So what is external to you would include, in the first line, amurta and murta. Murta means a form. Amurta is that which does not have a form. Murta would include your body, which has a form. Amurta would include your mind, your senses, your powers of walking and talking, etc. These inner powers, collectively we call them sukshma sharira. Collectively, they are part of you as a jiva, as an individual person, and they are amurta. So you have a body, murta, and you have sukshma sharira, stula sharira, physical body, sukshma sharira, subtle body. You have both of these. Both of these are bahihi, external with regard to you, with regard to the conscious observer. And in addition to them, there is also karma, vasana. Vasana, the effects of karma, the effects of past karmas. By the way, past karmas includes karmas earlier in this lifetime, in addition to any karmas in prior lifetimes. So all of those karmas leave their consequences, a trace, an effect, here called vasana. So we have a body and mind, which are conditioned by past karmas, and all of this, which is bahi, it's external, all of this is prakalpita, projected, middle of the second, of the third line, atmani, on oneself, atmani. Projected on oneself means you project your I-ness on that which is not I. It would sound silly if I were to project my I-ness on a pot. If I were to say, I am this pot, you would recognize the ignorance of that statement immediately. But it's the same. When you project I-ness on your body, it's the same as projecting I-ness on the pot. Similarly, to project I-ness on your mind is due to ignorance. Not only that, but let me see. Not only that, but that's the root cause of suffering. As we just said, when you're identified with your physical body, the problems of that body become your problems. When you're identified with your mind, the problems of the mind become your problems. But when you are a sangha, detached from your body and mind, then the problems of your body belong to your body, the problems of your mind belong to your mind, and no problems remain to affect pure consciousness, your essential nature. So this is the central problem, that your sense of self is falsely superimposed on your body and mind. Why? Avidyaya, in the third line. Due to ignorance, due to the failure to recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, as pure consciousness. When you recognize your nature as pure consciousness, then you will no longer project that sense of I-ness on your body and mind. The body will just be body, mind will just be mind, and I, the pronoun I, instead of referring, pronouns, remember, have a referent. Usually, I can refer to this body, cause of suffering. I can refer to the mind. So when you say, I am male or female, that I is projected on the body. When you say, I am happy or sad, that I is projected on the mind. And when you stop projecting, then that I refers not to the body, not to the mind, but that I refers to pure consciousness, your essential nature. But then why why would we unnecessarily identify with body and mind? Well, it's not like you have a choice. Mudha drishti bihi. This problem occurs for those whose drishti here means worldview. Sight, literally sight. Those whose worldview is mudha, deluded, confused. Those who have not had the opportunity to undergo this kind of process of self-inquiry, self-reflection, and therefore they remain with that ignorance, they remain with the false superimposition, they remain projecting that I on body and mind, and not properly connecting I with pure consciousness. So what is the solution then? Apohya. Having negated what? Having negated everything, anything known. So this is one of our fundamental methodologies, very important methodology. Knower known, anything known to you is not you. That's so simple. So the pot is known to me, therefore it is not me. This body is known to me, therefore it's not me. Happiness and sadness in my mind is known to me, therefore they're not me. This is negation. So apohya, after this negation, what kind of negation? Na iti. We're breaking the words apart. Neti, neti, you know very well, not this, not this. So through that process of negation, anything known to me is not me. And having negated all that is known, let's say known to you, having negated everything that is known to you, what remains? Shankara says, avasheshitaha drishihi. Drishihi, literally the seer, the knower, consciousness. Consciousness avasheshita remains. After negating all that is known, the essence of the one doing the negation, of course, is consciousness. You can't have an unconscious negator. So the negator is in essence consciousness. And when this process of negation comes to a completion, what remains can be only consciousness and consciousness alone. And once again, this process of negation is not a philosophical process. I mean, it sounds philosophical. Absolutely. Anything known to me is not me. That's a philosophical statement. But our purpose is not to gain philosophical wisdom. Our purpose is to gain freedom from suffering. How? By negating the I-ness of the body and I-ness of the mind. This process of negation is actually, Shankara gives further this process of negation in the next verse, which is the penultimate verse.
Prabodharupam manasortha yogajam. Prabodharupam manasortha yogajam. Spratau cha suptasya cha drishya tertavat. Suptau cha suptasya cha drishya tertavat. Tathaiva deha pratimanata. Pratak tathaiva deha pratimanata pratak drishe shariram cha manascha drishyatah drishe shariram cha manascha drishyatah.
Start in the second line. Smritau cha suptasya cha.
Smritau in memories, and Suptasya in dreams. By the way, this is actually a reference to the opening of the chapter, the title of the chapter. Do you remember the title? We saw the beginning of the chapter so long ago now. Last year, right? Last year we saw that. And the title of the chapter was Swapna Smriti Prakaranam. Prakaranam, the chapter on Swapna, dream, and Smriti, memory. So here Shankara is coming back to that to conclude the chapter. He says, during Smritau, when you remember something, what you remember, drishyate, is perceived artavat, as an object. When you remember, say you remember your parents. So in your mind can be an image of your parents, and that is an object in your mind, vritti, and that mental object is known to you. Here's our negation coming. Anything known to you is not you. So any object in your mind, when you remember something, all objects that come in memory are not you. And not just in memory, but suptasya cha. Also anything that comes to you in a dream. If you dream about your parents, any objects present in your mind during your dreams are also mental objects, vrittis, and they are known to you. Anything known to you is not you. Okay, this is a little obvious, but the point is actually in the first line. He says, and this is again a metaphor, he says, in the same way, and I'm adding that, he doesn't say it, but that's Shankaracharya's intention. In the same way, prabodharupam, when you're, prabodha means when you're awake. So Shankara's first dealt with objects in your mind, when you remember something and when you're dreaming. Now, we're dealing with objects in your mind when you're awake. And those mental objects are prabodha rupam. Mental objects that occur in a waking state, they are also vrittis. Vrittis where? Manasaha, that are in the mind, that belong to the mind. And what about those vrittis? Artha yoga jam. Those are vrittis connected to various objects. For example, when you see me, there is an image of me in your mind. That image of me is an object in your mind. It is a vritti in your mind. It is known to you. And being known to you, that object in your mind is not you. Now look what Shankara has done here. He's built it up. Anything that's present in your mind when you remember something are mental objects, vrittis. They are not you. Anything in a dream, mental objects, not you. Anything right now, mental objects, not you. Watch this. Your perception of your own body is a mental object. Think about this just for a moment. You experience your own body like you experience any other object. You experience your own body. But the body that you're experiencing is a mental object, a vritti in your mind. It is known to you, therefore it is not you. And the same goes for any mental objects. So in this way, he is negating. Notice this negation is not negation of the world around you. This negation is negation in terms of experience. What you experience is whatever takes place in a waking state or dream state, right? Deep sleep, we can all not really need anything to experience. You experience silence, darkness in deep sleep. So waking state, which would include memory, dream state, everything you experience in life, we can say the only thing you will ever experience in life, the only things are the objects in your mind when you're awake and when you're dreaming. All that is negated here. They are all mental objects, vrittis, known to you. Therefore, they are not you. And then Shankara concludes here, tata eva, and this is the second half, tata eva, in this way, shariram cha manaha cha, shariram cha, the physical body, manaha cha, and the mind, which would include sukshma sharira in general, all of these associated with your body and mind are pratak. We have to jump around a little bit here. In the third line, they are pratak. They are separate. Separate from what? Last line, drishehe. Separate from the seer. Separate from the observer. Everything you experience outside in the world and inside your mind when you're awake or when you are dreaming, all of that is drishehe pratak. It is all separate from the seer, the observer, the sakshi, the awareful witness, consciousness, pure consciousness, your true self, satchidananda, atma. So all, everything you experience, this is the negation, neti neti, whatever you experience is experienced by you as a vritti. Those vrittis are mental objects. Those mental objects are known to you. Therefore, they are not you. Why? Last word, drishyataha, because they are known. Deha pratimanataha, like the size and shape of the body are known, like attributes of your mind are known. Everything you experience, again, that's a nice summary. Whatever you experience in your entire lifetime, whether it's outside in the world or whether it's inside your mind while you're awake or dreaming, all of that is known to you as mental objects, vrittis. All those vrittis are known to you, and therefore they are not you. And what remains? You. Pure consciousness. The drishi, the seer, the sakshi, the awareful witness. Pure consciousness alone remains. Very nice. And that brings us to the last verse of chapter 14, Swapna Smriti Prakarana, comes to an end with this verse, and Shankara ends in a very beautiful way. Swabhava Shuddhe Gagane Ghanarike, Swabhava Shuddhe Gagane Ghanarike, Male Payate sati cha visheshata, male payate sati cha visheshata, yatha cha tadvat shruti varita dvaye, yatha cha tadvat shruti varita dvaye, sada vishesho gaganopame drishao, sada vishesho gaganopame drishao. So we're back to space in the in fact, same word. So in the first verse we saw today, gaganam was used for space. Here, gagane, in space. So in space, what is in space? Ghana adike. Ghana here means clouds. Clouds, etc., are in space. But the question is, do those clouds affect space? This is one of our very much used metaphors, very good metaphor. In your mind, and so clouds are dark. So the question is, does the darkness of the clouds in the sky affect the sky? Is the sky darkened by the clouds? It's like when there are clouds of sadness in your mind, do those clouds of sadness affect consciousness? This is a metaphor, very, very helpful. So Shankara develops it. He says, gagane, in space, space which is svabhava shuddhe, by its very nature, it is shuddha, absolutely pure. Svabhava shuddhe, by nature, space is pure. Pure in the sense that the presence of clouds doesn't touch or affect space. Space remains unaffected. The very next word, same thing. That malay, there was an that got lost due to grammar. A malay. In space, which is free from mala, free from impurities, free from the darkness of those storm clouds. So in pure space, and don't need to repeat all of this, in pure space, there are dark clouds, but, and now here we get the sense of the drishtanta. Drishtanta means metaphor. Those clouds, apayate, they go away and come back and go away and come back, just like clouds of sadness in your mind. Go away and come back, go away and come back. But when the clouds, apayate sati, when the clouds have gone away or returned, cha avisheshata, that space remains avisheshata, with a condition of being unchanged, unaffected, untainted. Unaffected is a good translation. So, first half is when dark clouds fill the sky is not affected. When clouds of sadness fill your mind, you, consciousness, is not affected. When those dark clouds go away, what happens to sky? Sky remains unchanged. And when sadness goes away, what happens to consciousness? Remember, unchanging consciousness observes the clouds of sadness rolling in, as it were, and pure, unchanging consciousness observes the clouds of sadness dissipating. Dissipating in fact, a common term used in many texts is chidakasha. And based on this metaphor, akasha means space. Say gaganam and akasha, synonyms. Chidakasha. Chid is chit, consciousness, chaitanya. Chit becomes chid due to grammar rules. So chidakasha is the metaphoric space of consciousness. So if you have dark storm clouds in space, here we have dark clouds of sadness in Chirakasha. But just as the just like the space outside is unaffected by those dark clouds, in the same way, Chirakasha, the metaphoric space of consciousness, is utterly unchanged by the presence or absence of these clouds of sadness and whatever else may occur in your mind. Now, Shankara now wraps up the chapter, Tathacha, and further, Shruti Varita Dvaye. Actually, Yata, in the same way. So the clouds going away. Well, there's something a little bit tricky here. Watch this. Shruti Varita Shruti Varita Dvaye. This is a metaphor for the dark clouds going away. Here, what's going away is dvaya, duality. And duality is varita, is pushed away, so to speak. I'm going to come back to that word. It is pushed away, how? By shruti, by scripture, especially the scriptures that tell you neti neti is a practice, a process of self-inquiry that you should engage in. So by this scripturally based practice of negation, neti neti, dvaya, duality, is varita, is pushed away, is negated. And here's a subtle point I want to make. When, this is a very important point. When the dark clouds are present in the sky, sky remains unaffected even in the presence of the dark storm clouds. Meaning, if what you want is pure space, you do not have to remove the dark clouds for the sake of enjoying pure space. You already experience pure space even though the dark clouds are present. You don't physically have to remove the dark clouds. This is so important because it means you don't have to remove the dark clouds of sadness in your mind. Sometimes you can't. We've talked several times of how an enlightened person can feel sad. And, you know, if an enlightened person goes to a sad movie, you think they won't feel sadness? The inability to feel sadness is somehow inhuman. So we understand. Enlightened people can feel sad like anyone else, but just as you know that space remains unaffected in the presence of the dark clouds, in the same way you can know that your consciousness remains utterly unaffected even in the presence of clouds of sadness. This is so important. And that's why when it says Shruti Varita Dvaye, when duality is Varita, is negated, not removed. If you remove duality, how can we relate to the world? If we can't tell the difference between you and me, duality, if we can't perceive and experience duality, there's no way to function in life. So our goal then is not to remove the experience of duality, but to negate. Notice these two words. To remove or destroy is one thing, but to negate
is quite another. Shruti Vadita. Duality is not removed. Duality is not destroyed. Duality is negated. How? Neti, neti. When you're done negating everything that is not me, the me that remains, the consciousness that remains, is non-dual. One, all-pervasive, undifferentiated, undivided consciousness remains. And he says that tadvat, this in the same way, drishau, with regard to consciousness, sada avisheshaha. Consciousness is sada, always, avisheshaha, unmodified. That's a better translation. Unmodified, unaffected, untainted, gagana upame, just like space. Very nice. When duality is negated, meaning you know that the clouds of sadness are not as real as you, you know that the clouds of sadness can't affect you, when those clouds of sadness are negated, sada avisheshaha. You recognize that you, in your essential nature, as pure consciousness, you remain utterly unaffected by any and all external influences. This is being asanga, the truth that Atma is asanga, utterly unaffected by any kind of suffering whatsoever. Good. And with this verse, Shankara brings chapter 14 to an end. Next week we'll begin chapter 15. Just a final comment here before we conclude. Just at the end of the chapter is a nice opportunity to observe that what we are engaged in is something not ordinary. So these teachings of Shankaracharya, I've mentioned several times, this text is not an introductory text. We are seeing Shankara at his finest in these teachings. There is no one who explains, no one who can lead you to understand what is non-duality better than Shankaracharya, no one who can lead you to discover your own true nature as that non-dual Brahman, no one can do it better than Sri Shankara. I don't think anyone who knows Vedanta would disagree with that statement. So here, in these classes, we have the opportunity to go through this text chapter by chapter, and really be blessed by the, I think, greatest of Sri Shankara's teachings. Just very powerful, very helpful. Okay, we'll end with a prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Tat Sat. You.